It was such a perfect series of events that took place, right? It was the video when we were in the voice call. It was the snapshot right then, just before the jam. It was the theme. They all just came together and they were like, you know what? Whether you like it or not, you guys are making a programmable, like a programming language data pack. Hello, everyone. I'm Gears.
And I'm Mox Valix, and welcome to the Datapack Podcast, Episode 6.
Episode 6. Yeah, so this is the first episode without no, not without. Sorry. This is the first episode with my new, I think it's the first episode with my new desk setup. I got a mic stand, so now the mic's
Ooh,
suspended in
nice.
front of my face instead of on the desk in front of me. I doubt you can hear a difference, but I'm a professional podcaster now or something. Okay, so today we are talking about a topic which we've again been discussing for a while, and that is. In fact, we mentioned it in the first episode. We were like, yeah, we should do that at some point, maybe next episode, and then we never did. But now we're doing it. So today we're discussing the Code of Copper data pack, which was really the first data pack that we worked on together, right?
Yeah.
Excluding the unfinished one, which we never finished.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess, well, we can start to talk about it. It too was made for a data pack jam, just like Harlequin's, the one we've just been discussing in the last couple of episodes. Yeah, so we made it for a data pack jam over a year ago now. It's almost been a year and a half since the first release of Code of Copper. But yeah, I guess we can talk about what led up to us working on that jam together, and then I guess yeah, and then I guess our process of working on the data pack.
I guess we really came up with the idea of working together on that jam. I think we were in a voice call for some reason.
Yeah, we're in a voice call for a video idea that I'd had for something for my YouTube channel. And I remember, well, you'd been on another one of my videos previously,
Yeah, the
which
quiz.
was, yeah, exactly. It was like a little quiz to test your Minecraft knowledge. And I remember I just invited you to that because I was just thinking of people who I could invite to the video, and I was like, huh, okay, well, I remember Mox Valix because I'd worked on you with that project, which again never got finished, I guess. Yeah, and that's how I knew Wolfian as well. He had been part of that project. But yeah, so I was like, yeah, okay, sure, I'll invite him. I'll just see if he wants to join. And yeah, well, you did, and then I asked you again to join this next video that I was working on. And yeah, so we were just in a VC talking about this and that, discussing how the video format was gonna work. And yeah, I guess we just got to talking about the latest snapshot, which had just come out, right? It was,
Yeah.
I believe, 23W03A.
That's the one. I'm never forgetting the name of that snapshot ever again.
Yep, that name is burned into my memory. I remember, I was out at the time it released, and I remember seeing the. I know somebody had sent a message somewhere containing the link to the Snapshot article. It's like, oh, okay, I'll give this a go. Let me just see, and I remember reading it, I was like, wait a second, wait a second. And it was such a great time for it too, like,
Oh, it was perfect timing. It was like, I think it was like a couple of days before the jam. Like,
yeah, literally. It was, well, Snapshot's released on a Wednesday, right? And the jam was on a Sunday, I think, so literally 4 days.
yeah.
But yeah, so the Snapshot, for anyone who isn't aware, anyone who wasn't paying attention to the Minecraft data pack changes at that time, added quite a few nice things, including the data modify string command. Data modify, no, it's data modify storage set string, that's it.
Yeah.
Which essentially allows you to, instead of, as was previously the only option, copying an entire string from one data storage or from one MBT location to another, you could now copy just a substring. So you could take just the middle six characters, or just the first character, or just the last character. And I realized, as I'm sure you did as well, that that meant we now were had the ability to do string parsing. So, you know, you can take a string of characters, and then essentially split it up into the individual characters using like an array, and then you can, you know, once you have an array of characters, you can do whatever you want with it. You can go through and process those characters in whatever way you want. So, that was great because at the time, I believe, I had just been working on a little toy virtual machine in a Minecraft datapack, basically, which has like a machine code language, and it would essentially execute machine code. And the next step to do in that was to make an assembly language so you could write in somewhat human readable code what you wanted to do, and then the datapack would assemble that and turn it into machine code. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to turn a string of characters into an array of characters so I can iterate over it and parse it sequentially, right? So I was thinking about it. I was like, I'm not sure there's even a way to do this. And well, there kind of was at the time, but it was very difficult to do and very hacky and work aroundy, and yeah, it just wasn't a very elegant solution. So basically, I was like, huh, okay, I don't know how I'm gonna do this. But then the update came out, I was like, oh, wait, I can just, this just allows me to do that now. So that was like great timing for that. And then, yeah, I guess, do you wanna say about what we were talking about?
So in that voice chat that we were on, like, I think the voice chat, it may have been either I think it was like the day after it came out, or was it
Yeah,
the day before the jam? I don't fully remember. Like, it
it
was.
may have been the day before the jam. Actually, while you're talking about this, I'll look it up on Discord and figure it out.
We were talking, and I think it was actually the day before.
According to my Discord, it was Sunday, but that can't. Maybe the data pack at jam was being announced later that day, actually.
Yeah,
Is that
maybe.
really?
It could have been. Oh,
Let's see. I'll find the data pack jam as well.
yeah, no, I think that might be right. I think that might be right because that would have been Sunday night for me and Sunday day for you, and the jam
Yeah.
was announced Monday morning.
Yeah, it's the same day. It was the day of the jam.
So it was the day of the
And
jam. We just happened to be in a voice chat and we were
yep.
talking about the new update, and I was like, you know what you could make with it, right? You could make a
Yeah.
regex parser. My first thought when I saw it was like, regex, this is obvious.
Regular regular expressions for anyone who doesn't know. Look it up. We're not going to probably go into detail about that now.
It's funny letters that allow you to match other funny letters. That's the simplest explanation.
Okay.
So we were talking about that, and then it somehow got around to the topic of, we should, like, do you have a team for the jam yet? We should do a jam together.
I remember how that came about, actually, because I remember we were saying, because I think that idea may have crossed my mind as well. I mean, I was definitely thinking about all sorts of different, things you could do with string parsing and what kind of stuff you could do. I was like, I'd be down to work on a regular expression data pack. That sounds like exactly the kind of thing that I'd be interested in. Because I was already somewhat interested in like technical data packs at the time, obviously, because I was making a virtual machine. We went into detail on that topic in our first podcast episode, so you can go watch that if you want. But I was like, okay, well, yeah, when should we get started on this? And I remember you said, yeah, well, we can't do it this week because I'm going to be working on the jam entry, right? And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, because I'm not sure I'd worked on a jam in a while, so I was like, yeah, maybe I'd be interested in working on it as well. And like, yeah, and then I basically asked you if you had a teammate yet, and I think you were planning to work with Wolfian, which, you know, you should know because he was in the last podcast episode. If you haven't watched that, watch it. But I think you could have teams of up to three. So we decided to work on the thing together, and then, you know, of course, with all the luck of the data pack jam gods, the theme was announced.
Yep.
It was ancient technology, right?
Yeah.
And immediately I was like, you know what I want to do? Technology, ancient technology. I just want to make a kind of some sort of programming language that controls a robot in Minecraft, because that was also, I think, an idea that had crossed my head before we'd started working on it. I was like, yeah, you know what, this is perfect. Like some sort of steampunk type data pack which has like programmable robots. And I pitched the idea to you, and I don't know what was going through your head at that time, because it was just text, because I remember it was announced at like 10 p.m. at night, so I couldn't VC, but like I just remember, like, I was like super excited for that, because, you know, it was like, yeah, we're gonna make a robot that works in Minecraft. That's essentially what we did, right?
Yeah. So we took on the challenge. We were like, so firstly, the recent mob vote, well, the mob vote at the time had been between, I think it was the Alle, the Copper Golem, and what was the third one?
What was it called? The Glare?
Is that the one that, like, steals the pickaxe or something?
No. It was the one that screams when it's dark or whatever.
Oh, right, okay. Not very memorable, in my opinion. I remember, obviously, the Copper Golem didn't win because the Alle... Well, of course, the Alle won because, you know, unstackable item filter. So that made sense for it to win. But the Copper Golem was arguably the coolest one, in my opinion. Even though the Alle had better functionality, I was a little bit of a Copper Golem fan. And when we had the ancient technology and this idea for, like, programmable bots, I was like, okay, the bot, though, has to be a Copper Golem. And it was just perfect for, like, it was perfect for the theme. It was perfect for the, what we were trying to make. And it just, everything fell into place. And that was really, it was just really exciting.
Yeah, it was such a perfect series of events that took place, right? It was the video, we were in the voice call, it was the snapshot right then, just before the jam, it was the theme. They all just came together and they were like, you know what? Whether you like it or not, you guys are making a a programming language data pack and programming robots in Minecraft, so
Yeah, and I remember when you pitched a programming language to me, because I think that's how it happened. Yeah, I remember just thinking at the time, like, how are we gonna do this? And I was like, I'm thinking through, like, is this feasible? And I'm like, it might just work. Like,
Well, because I remember that at the time I was just starting to get really interested in like developing your own programming language, and yeah, I was just interested in that. So I already had some ideas of like how that would work and everything. But yeah, I guess you hadn't really played around with that idea before, so that was sort of a new concept to you, I guess.
yeah, I to be honest, I'd never like worked on doing any programming language design or anything like that. I remember when I was like a lot younger, playing around with programming, I was like, yeah, I'll make a programming language, but I had no idea what I was doing. I just like tried to make a sequence of if checks based on words, and you know, that went about as poorly as you can imagine.
Yeah, I had tried to do that before, and then unru rapidly realized that's programming languages are way more complex than that. And maybe that's for another time. But
Whoops.
oh yeah, okay, so for anyone listening on audio, we have the Code of Copper data pack installed on the server we're playing on, and we are currently exploring one of the structures, which we'll probably talk about later, but it's one of the structures that comes with the Code of Copper data pack, and there's a trap in it which got set off.
Yeah.
But yeah,
God
so
damn it, Wolfian.
maybe we'll talk about like programming languages separately another time, because like I have a lot to say on the topic. I'm not sure if that's really the right thing for this podcast, but you know, anyway. But yeah, I was just sort of starting to get into things, and I'd written a few basic programming languages. I remember I'd written, I think it was just before then, that I had written a little small program which parses a very simple programming language and manages to like actually run it. So I had like a little Hello World thing going, and you were like able to define your own functions and stuff, which was a lot of fun. So yeah, I was very much interested in that at the time. So I think that was partially where the idea came from. But I. Saying that, I'm like way more experienced with it now, and like I feel like I might have approached the problem a little differently, had I been more experienced when that happened. But anyway, you know, you live and you learn. So, yeah, we basically decided there's sort of two parts of a programming language, right? Because programming languages are, depending on the language, can be, you know, very, very complex in nature. And there's sort of two aspects of a programming language to make them to make it work, right? So the first one is the parser. And the parser is in charge of reading through the source code, the code that the programmer writes. And understanding essentially what you mean by that, right? Because programs can take essentially an infinite number of forms, because, you know, you can have any sort of order of logic or whatever, you know, you can essentially express any set of logic with a programming language. And depending on what that is, your program is going to look very different. And you're going to have different variable names, and people have different coding styles, and it's quite a complex thing for a computer to do. So the first job is the parser, which parses the code and essentially converts it into what's called an AST, an abstract syntax tree, which is basically a piece of information that is an internal format which essentially keeps track of the structure of the program without having any of the variation of actual code, right? And then the second step is, though I'm simplifying it, is the compiler or interpreter, which essentially takes the AST and converts it, and either, in the case of a compiler, converts it to another language like machine code, or an interpreter just runs the code. And so obviously in Minecraft we're not going to write a compiler because there's nothing to compile to, at least not at that time really. But so we're writing an interpreter. So we decided then that to make the development process quicker, we were going to split up the two jobs, right? Because we only had a week, keep in mind, right?
Yeah.
We only had a week, and we had to make this whole programming language.
Yeah. I remember, I think it was the first day of the jam, we got in a voice call together. I think we even spun up a world, a shared world, to like plan in. And I remember that was where we decided, yeah, this is who's doing what. Like we decided that I would be working on the parser and Gears would be working on the interpreter. And we were like, it's going to be a lot of work, but if we, if we both go all in on our particular,
on our part of the code,
part of the code, we might just be able to make it work. And,
And I think, go on.
That was, like, firstly, like, that first day where we were in a call together, we planned out who's doing what, and also then planned out, like, what the AST itself would look like. We designed the basic AST there in that world. And really, that was, I mean, we're talking about all of these things that went right in our favor. But in terms of the things we had control of, that was the thing, arguably, that really, like, made it so that the program would work. Like,
I agree. Without that step, there's no way we could have, there's no way we would have finished it in time. Yeah, but we essentially then, we decided on all the language features, which we were going to have. So, you know, we said, okay, we want, obviously a print function, so we can print something. We want to be able to move the golem around. We want to be able to place a block. We want to be able to assign a variable. We want to be able to do basic arithmetic. We want to be able to run a piece of code only if a certain condition is true. All these things, you know, we said, okay, these are things we're going to do, and we pretty much didn't add anything after that. We just designed the AST essentially, then and there, and just said, okay, here's how it's going to look, and that's it pretty much. So after that, we essentially went our separate ways, and I worked on the interpreter, and so I had to handwrite the AST. I was like, I would create a program and then hand parse it into the AST and then run it through my interpreter to see if it worked. And then you wrote the parse, obviously, which was generating the AST. And
yep.
because we had already designed the AST, right?
Yeah.
But there was no extra communication required. All we had to do is just implement the
our
specification
specific
which we'd
part, yeah.
Yeah. Which we'd designed, and that was it really, right? And then the exciting part was, when was it? It was like, I want to say it was the Friday, maybe?
Yeah, I think, fourth day of the jam.
If we started on Sunday, it was like fourth or fifth day.
Yeah.
We were like, we got the two things that we'd been working on completely separately. We hadn't touched each other's code at all. And we were like, yeah, okay, now we're going to stick them together. And it worked pretty flawlessly, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of minor, like, naming differences that we had, like, somehow made, but apart from that, the two things, like, that moment when we just put the two of them together and it pretty much worked, I think you have a clip of it in your video, but
that was a video, so exciting. Yeah, there's a video on our development process on my channel, which I'll put a link to. We'll link it in the cards and in the description and everything. But yeah, I was recording that moment because I knew there would be, well, I knew one of two things would happen, right? As always does. Either something would fail miserably and there'd be some weird thing which made our code, like, not work together and we'd have to work through it.
Yep.
Or there'd just be that light bulb moment where, you know, you take the two things you've been working on separately, you stick them together, like, oh my god, this actually works.
Yeah.
And the latter happened, and it was pretty cool.
And what I'll say as well for, like, what really, like, made it incredible to me is I was actually on holidays for the duration of the jam.
Yeah.
Like, it just, like, that was the only, like, downside for me, is there was just this really unfortunate, like, timing of the jam where I was not home. I was, like, away. I was away from home. I had obviously brought my laptop, so I could work on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also, like, you know, I was at a shared house with a bunch of family and friends.
Yeah, I remember.
So, like, there was a lot of times where, you know, I want to hang out with, you know, my family and friends. I don't want to spend my entire trip just sitting on my computer trying to, like, develop.
No,
right?
Obviously.
So I had to, like, I mean, obviously all of the spare moments I could find on that trip, I managed to squeeze in the dev work, which I, there was a lot of times where it's like, quick 15 minutes I've got in this gap. I'm just going to sit down and I'm just going to quickly hack out this thing. And I remember as well, because I had, like, where I was had very poor reception. The internet was very spotty. So it wasn't reliable whether I was going to be able to have an internet connection and be able to talk. So, and obviously because we live in different time zones, the only time I can talk is like my nighttime. So I just have these memories of going out the back of the shack that we were staying at, out onto the dirt road out the back. It's like really dark outside and it's a little bit cold, but I'm on the phone because this was the best spot that had reception and also no people around. I'm on the phone, like, on Discord voice call, trying to work out this, like, minor technical detail that we haven't specced out or some decision that we've got to make. And we only had a couple of these calls because, like, I didn't have good reception and much time and time zones, all this stuff. But we just managed to get enough communication to be able to have the finish thing pretty much work straight off the bat. Like, and that was such a good feeling getting that to work.
Yeah, I always love that feeling where you're like, you're working on this thing, which in your head you have planned out, right? But in practice, you actually don't know whether it's going to work or not, and then you try it and it works. That's just like the best feeling.
Yeah. And it's like that state where you've kept the entire concept. You've managed to map the entire concept to your brain. And like,
yeah.
But obviously, because you're in such a state of just constant quick push, 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 get it out, get it out, get it out, you haven't tested it properly. You haven't like, you haven't sat back and actually seen if it works. You're just like implementing because there's such a time crunch.
Yeah. I think,
And like,
I would say one other thing that, that helped us get everything done so quickly, right? Is that, well, we didn't spend too long on the planning process. Like, we didn't spend 3 days figuring out the exact details of the language. And I think we both had a fairly similar idea of how it was gonna, of how it was gonna look, and how it's gonna function, because I don't remember having, like, we didn't have, like, endless discussions of like, oh, maybe I think we should do it like this. No, I think we should do it like this. I think it should look this way. We just sort of, you know, got it done.
Yeah.
And figured out how it's going to work.
I mean, like,
which was great.
The good thing is, like, because the scope of the language was so, like, it was a very basic language at that time. The scope of it was like functions, expressions, like, very simple, basic interpretation.
Functions
language.
Weren't even a thing yet.
Functions weren't even... We had built-in functions, I think, right?
Yeah, we had what we call instructions.
We had instructions. Oh, I forgot about that, actually.
Because, yeah, I guess... Should we talk about, I guess, the language? Because looking back, I remember, like, when we actually made it, right? Again, we only had 1 week to do this, so... Our scope was very limited, but we were like, yeah, so, well, because it was a very new concept, right? It was never really possible to make a programming language with data packs before, right? You could do it with mods if you wanted to, but, like, with data packs, it wasn't really possible.
I mean,
and so
there was obviously... when we were starting this, I'm going to interject for a second.
Yeah.
We thought we were the first. We found out later, in fact, someone else had done a text-based programming language about a year before us. Using
and
the old method of string parsing.
Two, I think. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah,
but obviously it was very slow and it was not nearly as like featureful as even our basic implementation. So
and it was a different thing.
Yeah.
But I also later found out, it was quite a lot later, that Seth Bling, who is an amazing data pack developer, he's done some really cool projects. He had made a programming language which had a lot of similarities to ours, as in, yeah, it was sort of based on the basic programming language, but it was similar. And he had used, like, a way more primitive thing with, like, this was, like, even before data storage existed, so he had to, like, store everything with armor stands, and, I mean, it was crazy slow. It was, like, a tenth of the speed of Code of Copper. But yeah, he did make a data pack which did a programming language. But ours was the first of its kind, really. It was the first with the... I think it was the first from the new update, because literally we released it 10 days after, or 11 days after the update came out, which...
I mean, that's really thanks to it being a jam entry, because if it wasn't a jam entry and we just decided to do it, it's likely we wouldn't have released it for months. It's likely we would have kept tinkering with it. We would have been like, I don't like this part. It may not have even got finished. But
yeah,
because
it's
a jam, and we've talked about this endlessly in other
episodes. Yeah, we definitely said it in our last episode a bit, like, the pressure is helpful in
A real
in
driving
this case,
force.
I find.
to
it's like,
get
yeah,
it done.
We're gonna work as hard as need be to get this, the minimum viable product, right? We get the minimum viable product out, and once it's released, then you can, you know, sit back and slowly update it. But
yeah,
I think with every project, every programming project, it's always like, it's the first release that's the hardest one to to get done, because you're always like, yeah, well, I could release it now, but I could add this. But if you release it, just get the first release out, then you can say, oh, okay, I want to add this and this. Okay, let me work on an update quickly. You get a few features out, make a version, you know, 1.1, and then you work on the next set of features you want to add. And that's just a much better way to do it. So, but I remember being like super impressed with how the data pack turned out, you know, towards the end of the week, right? I was like, wow, that we actually did this. And, you know, and it was still super impressive that we got all of that working in 1 week, because we can go through the feature set in a minute. I think that'd be interesting to just cast our minds back to what the language was like at that time. But looking back now, like, that language, the language of Golem script that we had at the time of first release after 1 week is nothing compared to what we have now.
It's almost unrecognizable compared to the, like, what I would say is the mostly finished product. Obviously there's still features we have planned, but like, it's a full release now, I feel like, usable language, whereas it's like you can barely tell they're the same language.
I mean, it was pretty simple, because again, I've said this several times now this podcast, but we only had 1 week, so you can't design an extensive language. Although, you know, JavaScript was made in how long was it? 10 days? 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, JavaScript was written in an actual programming language.
But yeah, that's true. It wasn't written in a Minecraft data pack, and presumably, Brendan Eich, who is the creator of the JavaScript, I believe, presumably he had studied programming languages at university or something before creating JavaScript, so he had a little bit more experience than us. But the language has evolved so much, and there were several annoying bugs which luckily the judges of the pack didn't seem to notice at the time. I guess, should we go through, and I could look up the syntax of like all the different features that we had in version 0.1, but I think it'd be more fun to just like talk about, you know, from memory, talk about what features it had. So obviously, so we had what's called instructions, which are basically just, you know, it's a statement essentially which tells the language what to perform. So we had instructions, we had print to print something into the chat, we had place to place a block, move to move the golem, get block, right? Yeah, we had get block.
Yep.
Which was to get the block at a position.
Yep.
I'm just gonna interject again.
The funny thing, because these instructions, obviously they're not functions, they don't return properly. Yep. So we had special global variables that they would write to, that would then be read from.
Because get block is inherently it's a pure action, as in it doesn't have any side effects, right? And it just returns a value. But statements, you couldn't nest statements. They're statements, not expressions. So, get block, basically, you couldn't use get block inside of another instruction. So, yeah, we had it outputs to the dollar block variable. And then you got to read that, which is Yeah, not how we do it anymore, luckily, thankfully. But yeah, so we had get block. Did we have any other of the single line instructions, or were those the three that
Did we
we
have get
had?
pause?
No, position I think was later.
Position was later, so we had just get block. Do we have place?
Yeah, I said place.
Oh, you said place already. So we had place.
Place, get block, and print, I think, were the main ones, as far as I can remember.
Yeah,
And then
because
we had the two control flow ones. We had.
move.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I said that
Move.
as well. I said
Oh,
that
you
as
said
well,
move
but I
as well.
forgot about that. Yeah, move. And then, oh, we also had a let, which declares a variable.
Ah, yes. The assignment.
And then we had the two control flow things. We had if and while. So if lets you conditionally execute a block of code, and while lets you execute a block of code while a condition is true, like repeatedly.
Yep. Did we not have loop at that point?
No, we loop was later. We just had if and while,
If and while.
and let and move and print and get block
Yeah.
and place. Those seven things. Yeah. And then for arithmetic operators, we had equals, which was just a single equals because we didn't figure out how to do
Yeah,
multi-character operators until later.
a limitation of the parser was that everything had to be character by character, and it didn't really remember
Yep.
state across, like, it didn't really, it
Except
couldn't,
for instruction thing.
except for instructions, which was a special, a special setup that it had.
Yeah.
The version one of the parser, terrible. Absolutely the worst thing.
But yeah, and then so we had single equals for a quality check because we didn't have reassignment. Reassignment, you just had to use let again. So if you want to do let a equals one and then assign two to a, you do let a equals two, which anyone who's programmed in another programming language which has let is like JavaScript or, any programming language which has like variable declarations will know like that's really weird because you declare variables once and then reassign them afterwards. Not You can't declare them twice in most languages. But the syntax was very basic, right? Because of that limit of because of that basically, the syntax was super simple because every line was either empty or started by an instruction keyword, right? Which
Made
made the
it.
parser much easier. Because yeah, if you start with let, you then know it's going to be a variable declaration or assignment. And if you start with something else, then that. Whereas in, now you can like start it with a variable name to do like a function call or a reassignment or all sorts of different things, right? But yeah, we didn't really have time for that kind of thing at that point. Yeah, and then also all variables existed in the global scope. There was no scoping of anything. And also there was no proper operator precedence. It was just due to some weird quirk of how the parsing or interpreting works, operator precedence was right to left. So yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, that may have
But
been the parser's
other than
fault.
that, it was a functioning language, right? It worked. And yeah, that was pretty cool. Although I can imagine it would be a pain to write programs in it. I mean, I did write several programs in it.
Well, we had to write all the
But
example programs,
yeah, that's
so,
true. But like thinking back now, I'm like I would hate to have to write in that again.
Yeah, writing in Golem Script V3 or 0.3.0
So
is
much nicer,
so
yeah.
much nicer.
Yeah. But yeah, oh, and there was that also the weird bug where if you use the print instruction inside a while loop, it would break and not format properly, because I was using the Moxlib string
concatenation
thing, which I've realized now that I could just have done interpret true and that would have worked fine, but I didn't think of that at the time apparently, and so that was like bound to the number of, like, it wouldn't work if you did it two ticks in a row, so it would essentially break.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it worked fairly well, and the judges seemed to like it, because we won the jam.
10 out of 10 on technicality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, say a little bit about Wolfian's part, you know.
Yeah.
So if people are watching the video, you will have seen the structures that he, or at least two of the structures that he made for.
The third one, I've never seen in all my playthroughs of this data pack.
The third structure is an underwater lab, but I made it super rare. And...
yeah.
So it's a real task. It
spawns in like deep oceans, doesn't it?
Yeah, deep ocean somewhere like. With, like, really low spawning conditions. So, yeah, it basically never happens. It's probably similar to, like, a woodland mansion in rarity, I'd say.
Yeah, which is what... But there's an explorer map for woodland mansions, because they're so rare that you're never going to find one naturally.
Yeah, so... anyway. Wolfian obviously... did all of the structures, and then also the textures for the golem,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, and also all of the lore.
Yeah, because without...
Yeah, you want to go?
Yeah, well, without Wolfian, Codacopper would have literally just been a programming language and a little armor stand which it controls, essentially, right? That's all it would have been.
Yeah.
But Wolfian basically came in... and he, yeah, well, he wrote a whole story, to, like, you know, because the whole idea was it's, like, sort of the steampunk type setting, and so he wrote the story of this, like, post-war world where there's these three different sort of factions, and one of them was, like, working on the golems, and, you know, trying to automate tasks, and I forget the exact story, but he wrote these three diaries of these fictional characters which existed, and you're sort of finding the structures and the remains of these old conflicts when you're traveling through the world, which was amazing. And then, yeah, he built these structures, he wrote all the lore, he made the textures, and sort of tied the whole thing together, really.
Without
it, it would have had technicality, but it wouldn't have had polishness, it wouldn't have had, you know, whatever, aesthetics or whatever the other category is.
It would have just been a tech demo at that point. Whereas he elevated it to be an actual data pack, a full playable experience.
One thing I will say is that, like, with that, you could easily make, essentially, your own MC function replacement, which runs inside MC function and, you know, essentially gives the player cheats and just allows you to do whatever you want and just control the world. But what we wanted to do, especially since it's a data pack jam, and for a jam, you really want your pack to be like a playable experience, right? You want the judges to be able to download your pack and play through it and experience it. So we wanted to make it survival friendly, right? So we had it, you know, so the structures generate fairly rarely, so you can't just get, you know, infinite of them, and then they generate the big airships, which are by far my favorite of the structures.
The airships,
you know. They're amazing. They generate with a copper golem in them each, and so you could go around collecting them in the world. And we made the commands in the thing balanced in such a way that, you know, place doesn't just create a block out of thin air. You've got to actually give the golem blocks in its inventory to use. Or you give it a pickaxe to use or whatever.
And that's another thing is we told him like we basically told Wolfin we want it to be a chess minecart. Can you design the golem to fit in the chess minecart?
Oh, yeah.
And he did a really good job of
He
making
did a good
it
job.
look like it's intentional, even though that's just
Yeah.
purely a limitation of how data packs work.
Yeah, the reason that it's in a minecart is because it's virtually impossible to hide the minecart texture for a chest minecart without
Yeah.
weird trickery and workarounds. Yeah, so I think, yeah, Wolfian helping out was just, you know, super needed, because otherwise it would have just been like a sort of just sort of proof of concept type thing, you know, rather than actual thing. But yeah, I think it's fun. You can use it to like make farms. You can program it to do tasks for you that you wouldn't normally be able to do with redstone because it can place and, well, break blocks you can do, but it can place blocks, which is normally impossible to do with redstone.
Yeah.
So yeah,
And the
it's
fact that it
definitely,
can read blocks as well means it can do some
yeah,
like
it
quite
can also,
advanced logic.
yeah, it can interact with the world a lot,
Yeah, like you can set up
which is
paths for
cool.
it to follow. You can like have if it encounters this thing, it should do X or Y. And it's like there's a lot of potential to it, really. And I mean, if this sounds interesting to you, I would highly encourage trying out the latest version of the pack, which will obviously
Yep.
be in the description. And yeah, we think it's fun.
Yeah, okay, so let me so yeah, we found one of these airships this episode. I was hoping to find another one, but that's fine. So we have our little copper golem here. I still find it really annoying there's that little inventory of golem
This was a
thing there,
change they
which
made.
it's so annoying, yeah.
It didn't used to
They
do that.
now display the names for inanimate entities like chest minecarts, so yeah, but yeah, let's put that in. You can write the program, so if people are watching on YouTube they can see your screen. I would highly recommend going over to YouTube for this because you can't really see this experience via audio. But yeah, nice. Place the block.
And if we give it,
Cool.
so I can then put in a pickaxe, right? And I can edit my program
Insert block,
again.
is that, do you print that, or is that
Yeah,
a
that
debug
this
block
is one of
from?
the this is
Okay.
one of the de default functions that come as
Oh,
part
right.
of
Yeah.
the pack. So I'm gonna change place to now use iron pickaxe, and that it detects that's a tool, and so it knows to use it like that. And so it broke the
And there
block
we go.
again.
It's got. That looks correct, doesn't it?
Did I put in two cobblestone? I must
Let's see. Run it again. We may have just discovered a bug in.
have
Actually, place is always. Place, for some reason, every single time we look an update, you know, we go through to update it. We haven't touched place at all. And at the end, we check. Before we release, we always check if everything's working.
It
And
seems
place is
to
always
be working.
broken.
I think I just put in two. I think I put in two and then
Yeah.
forgot. But yeah, it seems to be working. I didn't put in the pickaxe.
Yeah.
That will cause it not to
That
work.
looks like it's
So yeah,
working.
as you can see, it only obviously functions if it's got the thing in its inventory. So fully survival friendly. And yeah, obviously you can then just break it again, pick it up, and you can see it even actually stores the It stores the program in the bot ready to be used again when you place it back down.
Yeah, although that is a much newer feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're playing on the latest version, except for the one updated to 1.21, because we're still playing on 1.20.6,
Yeah.
because mods need time to update, and
But
I
there
can't
wasn't really
play
any
without my
changes.
client-side mods. But yeah, there's the change. We haven't actually changed the functionality of it since when was it?
0.0.1, I think.
That was the year anniversary, wasn't it? It was the 1 year anniversary of the data pack that we did the most recent proper changes.
And I think that was procs that was the feature.
And the standard library, yeah.
Procs and the standard
But
library.
yeah, we've changed the language a lot since then. We have added the we've added a lot more. Well, to start with, we added a lot more instructions, right? We added, well, oh, another thing it had was dollar inventory, right? So it could see what was its inventory. But obviously, since functions, whatever, it was just a global variable which you could read from but not write to. There were so many weird quirks of the implementation of that. But yeah, since then
Change that to inventory, is
we've
it?
changed that to, yeah, they're all functions now, so pretty much everything's an expression now, so you can use it within other things. So get block literally returns value. You can literally just call it like a function in any other language, which is such a nice change. That took us forever to implement,
Yeah,
but we got there in the
there was
end.
a lot of rewrites.
You rewrote the parser
Three times.
twice, I think.
I think it was
Three
three.
times.
I think every major release of the pack had a rewritten parser. However, the like quote unquote rewrite from 0.1 to 0.2 was not nearly as big as the rewrite right from 0.2 to 0.3. Like,
And then we
0.2 was
rewrote the
like.
interpreter as well.
0.2 was more of a refactor, and 0.3 was a rewrite. And then, yeah,
0.3,
0.3.
we basically deleted every existing piece of code, except maybe the entity interaction code,
The
which I
entity
think is
integration
still
code.
like
Oof.
there from the original version
There's some
because
technical debt
yes.
in the entity interaction code, that's for sure.
But yeah, we basically rewrote the entire code base.
Yeah. And then should we talk a little bit about the after 0.1, so after the jam, because obviously we won the jam, which felt great, of course, and then we still like the we had found bugs obviously in the jam version, so we released patches to that, and we still had ideas for the pack.
We had a lot of ideas.
We had a lot of ideas for the pack, and so we pretty much just kept going as if the jam had never really ended. We just kept working on it. Now,
We just kept
obviously,
working on it.
it wasn't at the same pace as the work in the jam.
No.
The pace slowed down in development. And in fact, I think even 0.2, we had that out like the next month after the jam.
Yeah,
So it's really funny
we did,
looking at
didn't
the
we?
release schedule. Of like 0.1 to 0.2 is about a month of development between, and it was a lot more polished. I think functions were added in 0.2. Is this right?
No, functions were 0.3 because that was the big rewrite of the thing, right? Functions required so much.
We made functions in 0.2, but we didn't release them because they were so buggy.
Right, so yeah, Code of Copper version 1 was released January 29th. And then 0.1.4, which was the last 0.1 release, was February 7th. That was just over a week later. And then 0.2 was February 20th, and then 0.2.3, which was the last 0.2 release, was March 3rd. And then, oh, we released the alpha of 0.3 on March 22nd, which was basically the initial implementation of functions, right? We managed to implement functions in like, 3 weeks. But there were lots of bugs and lots of weird things when you had like nested functions, and the interpreter wasn't really built to work like that because of certain complications, which maybe we'll get into. I think we're going to split this into two parts because we've already been recording for quite a while now, right? How long we've been going for?
hour and 7 currently, but there's a little bit of gaps in there. It's about hour and 5.
So we should probably, at some point, we're gonna break and make a part 2, I think. So maybe we'll talk about the process of 0.3 a little bit more extensively in the next part, but there were certain complications with that, and so we essentially spent the next, November, so the next 8 months working on 0.3, and we released a couple of betas in that time.
I think we released then, 2 betas, right? I think we had beta 1 and beta 2.
Yeah, beta 1 and beta 2, yeah. But, and then...
one thing to note, and the reason why it took so long is, like, firstly, it took a bit more of a backseat to some other personal projects we had going on. So we weren't, like, we would have times where it would be, like, upwards of 2 to 3 weeks of, like, break in between us developing. And I think...
Yeah, like, we worked... that was the time we were starting working on our website and...
Yeah. I had also started working on my skin editor site, so that was taking a lot of my time.
And part of that was like summer holidays, and I'd been away quite a lot during that. So yeah, it wasn't like non-stop development. Like, it wasn't nearly as hard work as the first week, right? Also at that point, that was when we started doing the pair programming, because. Mm. Up until 0.3.0, right, we had been working separately on our thing. So I worked on the interpreter, you worked on the parser. And if we wanted to add a new feature, we'd say...
we'd basically have a call together and, like, discuss. And I think we still had the Google Doc at that point that we would, like, draw it into, I think.
Yeah, it would essentially discuss the feature, say how it would be implemented... write out the new AST, and then you'd go work on the parser, and I'd go work on the interpreter, and then we'd stick them together and it would work. But then after that, you wanted to, because I remember I was running into a lot of issues trying to implement functions in the interpreter. And at some point I got you on the call. I was like, okay, can you help me? Why isn't this working? And you weren't very familiar with the interpreter code, so you couldn't help that much. And so we then decided we were going to rewrite the interpreter because it was just going to help redo the way we'd approach the logic of it. And also we were going to do it together, so we'd both be familiar with that side of the code base. And we sort of stuck with that format for most of our projects since then, which obviously slows development down a lot, but we've talked about the benefits and the pros and cons of it, haven't we? And I'm just looking back at the changelog and the initial release. Remember the gear structures? I completely forgot they existed.
Do they still exist, or did I remember
they do exist? I'm pretty sure they do exist. I seem to remember finding one in this world a while ago. I don't know.
The story there, if I remember, I'll put a picture of one up on screen. The story there is that, obviously, Wolfian making the structures, I think pretty much, like, we pretty much gave him free reign of what structures he wanted to make. And he gives me a set of gears, and he's like, I want these to just be sprinkled about the world. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And so we've obviously got the assets there. But the thing with the world gen for Coda Copper, this is another thing that hasn't been touched in a good while.
We haven't touched the world gen or structures.
The structures are the same
since 0.1.0.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that it all still works.
Yeah, world gen has been surprisingly stable in comparison to other data programs. Yeah. Wolfian gave that to me, and now... the world gen for this pack was implemented at around 4 a.m. my time on the final day of the jam, because the jam was due at 6.
The last day, as you know, you may have gathered from our description of the final day in the Harlequins data pack in the last couple of episodes, it was pretty rushed. You know, you get the main features down, right? We had the programming language down, but There were tons of things we hadn't accounted for or hadn't implemented yet, like the user interface with the Golem, right? We wanted to implement, I'm really happy with the way we have the user interface now. It wasn't quite like that before, but yeah. Right click runs the program, left click stops the program, and then the old shift, then you get the actual right click and left click interactions with the thing.
Yeah.
But before, when you right clicked, it would literally open the inventory as it started running. We literally had it detecting you opening the Golem's inventory, which was, yeah. But yeah, the user interface wasn't done. We didn't have support for multiple Golems running at a time, right? Only one, because it just used all a global storage, so they'd all overwrite each other's variables and stuff.
Yeah.
So then we had to implement storing the data on the Golem and yeah, the world gen for all the structures and all the little polishing things which you don't think about until the very end. We had to do in that last crammed, hectic day,
Yeah.
just like Harlequins. And
But
yeah, again, we released like minutes before the deadline.
yeah. But like I mean, even though it was rushed, like I felt so good releasing that pack
Yeah,
because
it was.
it was like unlike Harlequins where I feel like I had a little bit of sadness that like I didn't get to do all the things that I wanted to do
Yeah, there
and
were a couple of things in Harlequins that didn't end up
end
working
up the
out
way that would have.
in the time limit, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas Code of Copper, other than that, like a couple of bugs which we found afterwards, it pretty much worked. We pretty much had all the features we wanted, right?
Yeah.
Which was, yeah. Also, the name Code of Copper, I believe, was just decided. We were like, okay, we're making the Planet Minecraft page for this. We have roughly 15 minutes before we got to submit it. What do we call the pack? Because I remember the
The Git repo was called
the
Minecraft
Git
Golem
repo was
Robots.
called Minecraft Golem Robots. And it was, but yeah, obviously that's not a proper name. So we had to come up with something, and you just suggested Code of Copper. I'm like, yep, good enough, and it stuck. So.
Stuck.
Yeah. Cool. So I think that is probably a good place to cut it. I think we'll go into part two next time because there's still more stuff we want to cover. But that's given a good overview of like working on it, mostly what we worked on over the week of the jam and like a couple of things we added later. And next time we'll talk about maybe more in depth some of the later releases, like because those had some pretty big changes, and also yeah about the future of this data pack and what we're planning for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I'll see you guys next time.